There we go. We're being recorded now for posterity. And as long as we're on the topic, you can hear most most of my previous shows. Just go to Radio for All. That's radio, the numerical character for ALL.org, radioforall.org, and just look for Mideast Madness. Follow the instructions. Okay. Now back to the article here. Walls and fences. For example, the adjacent communities of Bir Nabala, Al-Judiria, and Al-Jib are cut off to the east by an Israeli-only road, Route 443, to which the residents have no access, the Palestinian residents, and to the west by the Gvat Ze'ev settlement. The area is also entirely surrounded by a wall, imprisoning over 10,000 people within. The residents can access the West Bank by only two roads, one of which goes through a tunnel under Route 443 and the wall, under the wall, leading eventually to Ramallah. A second 400-meter tunnel actually goes under a built-up area of Gvat Ze'ev, eventually reaching the West Bank village of Bidu, which itself is cut off from the west of the West Bank by Route 443. Another Jerusalem canton is Anata, to the east of the city, with a population of about 65,000. Once a separate village, about two-thirds of Anata is within the annexed portion of Jerusalem, as is the adjacent Shuafat refugee camp. The eastern part of the village was assigned to the Palestinian Authority under the Oslo agreements. However, the wall now surrounds the entire village and the camp, with a single checkpoint leading to Jerusalem. Only Palestinians with Jerusalem ID cards, residents of the annexed portion of the village, are permitted to enter. Along the eastern side of the village, a new Arab-only road has been built, leading to the southern West Bank and north to Ramallah. This will eventually allow the villagers the, quote, privilege of traveling to these areas without going through checkpoints. None will be needed, since the road has no exits and is lined with walls and barbed wire. In addition, the separation wall dissects the Jerusalem communities of Kfar Aqab, Abu Dis, and Ar-Aram, destroying their community life. The residents are required to wait at checkpoints in order to enter Jerusalem, despite their legal residence in the city that confers the right under Israeli law to live and work in the municipality, albeit without the rights of citizenship. We're almost done here. Two more paragraphs. The complexity of Israel's management of Jerusalem and the various rights, and the various layers of rights and lack of rights of the city's residents has enabled the Israeli government to incrementally extend the sovereignty of the state over the past 42 years while denying citizenship to non-Jewish residents. This has been done in full view of the world and the acquiescence of successive White House administrations. The USA came to the forefront of the fight against apartheid in South Africa. Why not against the Israeli version of separation, known in Hebrew as Hafrada? Both Hafrada and apartheid mean separation. Hafrada, a term used by government officials, is embodied in the walled ghettos, segregated roads, and multi-layered civil rights of Jerusalem's residents. The system is as reprehensible as the former system in South Africa. Israel has twisted the Jewish yearning for a homeland into a mockery of decent government and democratic ideals. Jerusalem, as the heart and soul of both Palestinian and Israeli aspirations, needs to become an open city shared by both peoples within the context of a just and lasting peace. I've been reading from The Ghettos of Jerusalem by way of the Green Olive Collective, copyright 2008 to 2012. Written by Mr. Fred Shlomka, who is an Israeli social entrepreneur and the owner of www.toursinenglish.com. So, a lot of details concerning names that a great many of you out there have never heard of. Perhaps you still have some confusion between hearing about Arab villages and Israeli Jewish-only settlements. I'm sure not everyone has it in mind. I certainly don't have it entirely ordered in my mind how Jerusalem works, what all it encompasses. But Mr. Shlomka is admitting that it is a very complex and crazy kind of myriad, a geographical conundrum. And, of course, Israel, with its official line that Palestinians, or as they prefer to say, Israeli Arabs, have all the same rights and privileges as Israeli Jews do, that is far from the truth, according to Mr. Shlomka, and according to many other sources that I've come across. It's awful because I have argued with people on chat boards and comment sections of various articles that appear on the internet. I've had my comments put down, and sometimes they get sorely, seriously challenged by people who are like, "What? You can't prove that? Arabs have all the same rights that Israelis do." And admittedly, I'm having a real hard time coming up with the actual wording in Israeli law that spells out differences, specific differences, in the rights and privileges enjoyed by Jews versus the rights and privileges enjoyed by Israeli Arabs. Well, the thing is, particularly in light of the use of the term and the concept of apartheid as it applies to Israel-Palestine, which has come to the fore in recent years, people have come to realize that obviously this isn't the case. They do not have all the same rights and privileges. It's not an equitable situation, and it's certainly not equitable according to Zionist philosophy and Zionist practice, because Zionism dictates that Eretz Israel, meaning the land of Israel, historic Palestine, and more, in fact, more land beyond that, is intended for the Jews only. This is the sum and substance of Zionism. That's what it means. There's your definition. And Zionism is what led to the creation of the Israeli state, which was imposed on the region through a combination of political swindling, in my opinion. Political swindling through the United Nations and Jewish partisan force of arms, 1946, 1947, 1948, and 1949. If you were to ask your common everyday on the street Jew here in America, or at least the ones who are particularly pro-Israel, they'll remind you immediately, the Arabs attacked Israel in 1948. They were doing just fine. They were just sitting there, and the Arabs decided to attack. What those poor souls fail to tell you, and I think to a large degree because they don't know any better, is that Palestine had been in a kind of civil war for more than 6 months prior to the Arab invasion. Even though there was no state of Israel before that time, no state of Palestine before May 15th of 1948, for months and months, there was bitter fighting between, to some degree, between armed groups, but to a more awful degree, intimidations and massacres by armed Zionist partisans, all very well documented, even on Jewish websites that I visited. The Jews massacred upwards of 150, perhaps 250, mostly unarmed civilians, women and children and old men in Deir Yassin, an Arab village which is now vanished from the face of the earth, but for some rubble that still exists. I have recently learned that there have been approximately 70 other massacres by the armed Jewish militants of Palestinian civilians. Why did they do this? Because their priority was to create an Arab-free, or as they would say, Goyim Ren, Israel, for Jews only. Okay. Enough of that. That's the ghettos of Jerusalem. It is 3:36 Pacific Standard Time. Let me see, that would be 1536 hours here in California. Now, I'm pretty sure I read to people the details surrounding the impending nomination of former Nebraska Senator Chuck Hagel to be Secretary of Defense in the Barack Obama administration. Yes, I did read it. And that is recorded. Go to radioforall.org for the show, which would date, December 24th, I believe. December 24th, Mideast Madness. To catch my reading of the non-existent, quote, Jewish lobby declares war on Chuck Hagel. That was written by M.J. Rosenberg. Who I believe is a Jew. Now, in consequence to that, in subsequence to that, article, I'm going to read you another one by Mr. Rosenberg. Mr. Rosenberg continues. And I believe Mr. Rosenberg has a blog or a website or a combination blog website called MWC, Media with Conscience. Media with Conscience. M.J. Rosenberg. Yes, it's the Jewish lobby, and it consists of 1% of us. By M.J. Rosenberg. The neoconservatives' battle to sink the potential nomination of former Senator Chuck Hagel has again raised the issue of the power of the Israel lobby. And it should. Hagel, as a respected former senator, would be sailing to an easy confirmation if not for the power of the Israel lobby, which considers him insufficiently loyal to the policies of the Israeli government. The assault on Hagel is truly ugly, and opposing a highly respected ex-senator and decorated war hero out of fear that he won't defer to Netanyahu is also stupid. This is M.J. Rosenberg talking. Unlike John McCain, whose war record is ambiguous, Hagel's record was indisputably heroic. He and his brother Tom served side by side in Vietnam as infantry squad leaders and earned military decorations and honors, including 2 Purple Hearts. And to remind everyone, the Purple Heart's what you get when you're wounded in battle when you are wounded in battle or fall into a small number of other categories involving incapacitation in or of battle. Returning the article. To put it bluntly, how does it look to be opposing this American war hero for being insufficiently devoted to a foreign country? The most maddening thing is that the lobby does not speak for most Jews, not even close. The best proof of that was this year's election results, in which 70% of Jews, according to the polls, voted for President Obama, although Netanyahu and his cutouts here made clear that they preferred Romney. And as the definitive American Jewish Committee survey demonstrated, not even the Jewish Republican vote had much, if anything, to do with Israel. Only 5% of Jews consider Israel their most important issue. That would be 5% of American Jews. Republican Jews are Republican for the same reasons other Republicans are: the economy and other domestic issues. Overwhelmingly, Jews choose domestic issues as most important to them. Additionally, the Jews who do care about Israel, a strong majority at least, support neither Netanyahu nor the occupation. The last Israeli prime minister they admired was Yitzhak Rabin, who, I'll remind everyone, was assassinated by an Israeli Jew because that assassin considered Mr. Rabin not Jewish enough or not Zionist enough. Returning to article. So, who and what is the lobby? The first thing to know about it is that it is delivering money, not votes. It is irrelevant that most Jews are liberals and not Netanyahu devotees. The people with the money, i.e. the lobby, are right-wing on Israel. And it is those people, think Democrat Chaim Saban and Republican Sheldon Adelson and the like, who have the clout. Not the dentist or lawyer down the street or the local Not the dentist or lawyer down the street or the local Hadassah chapter. Mr. Rosenberg continues in his article, I worked on Capitol Hill for 20 years for 5 members of Congress and had hundreds of dealings with the lobby. Despite claims that the lobby includes Christians, that is simply not true, at least not in terms of influencing U.S. policies. First, so-called Christian Zionists do not give heavily to campaigns, so their support for Likud policies is both amorphous and insignificant. Second, Christian Zionists, quote-unquote, are Republicans who will never support the party of gay, lesbian, bisexual, transsexual rights, choice, regulations, and higher taxes. Unlike the AIPAC-directed donors, they are not in play. And again, as I spelled out for you last week, AIPAC is AIPAC. That's the American Israel Public Affairs Committee. Unlike the AIPAC-directed donors, they are not in play. They are just Republicans. Even when Christian Zionists do contribute to campaigns, their issues are the social issues like blocking marriage equality and not supporting Israel. Bottom line, the Israel lobby is the Jewish lobby. One would be hard-pressed to find a single legislator who kisses up to Netanyahu and AIPAC to please Christians. Not a single constituent organization that composes the lobby is anything but Jewish, starting with AIPAC. I'll read that again just so I can understand it. Not a single constituent organization that composes the lobby is anything but Jewish, starting with AIPAC. That's composes the lobby. I think I might have said opposes the lobby. The others all have the word Jewish in their names. Who are they kidding? That makes it critical that the overwhelming majority of Jews get the message across that the lobby does not speak for us. And that the lobby isn't us. Us, of course, referring to Jews. AIPAC, the American Jewish Committee, the Jewish Council on Public Affairs, and the multimillionaires associated with all of them constitute a lobby of a few thousand people. They are the Jewish less than 1%. The Jewish less than 1%. And that is all they speak for. Ending the article, a couple more paragraphs here. But, like the other more famous 1%, their voices drown the rest of us out. That is because our political system is not about votes. It is about money. Until we have public financing of campaigns, which is probably never, politicians will do what the lobby tells them to do. But remember, it's not the Jews. It is a few unrepresentative millionaires and billionaires who enjoy making the United States government quake, both for Netanyahu's sake and to feel all-powerful. Don't blame the Jews. And, Mr. President, do us all a favor and choose Chuck Hagel. The complaints of those whose first and usually only concern is ensuring that the U.S. never says no to Netanyahu should be ignored. As someone once said, or should have, the power of campaign contributions must stop at the water's edge. Copyright 2012 M.J. Rosenberg, all rights reserved. Mr. Rosenberg can be reached by snail mail at Post Office Box 76283, Washington, D.C., 20013. And that is M.J. Rosenberg, spelled R-O-S-E-N-B-E-R-G. He's all over the internet. Just Google him. Google the name. Or use your favorite search engine. I do have to say, I have one thing to say, one critical thing to say about this article, unless I'm just plain dumb. The way he throws around, the way Mr. Rosenberg in this particular article throws around the word Jews and Jewish and applies them to the Israel lobby, it, to me, is confusing. I mean, one of the last sentences here is, but remember, it's not the Jews. It is a few unrepresentative millionaires and billionaires who enjoy making the United States government quake, both for Netanyahu's sake and to feel all-powerful. And then he says, don't blame the Jews. Well, on the surface, this sounds like a contradiction to me, but perhaps he's leaving it up to the reader's intelligence and imaginary ingenuity here to understand that when he says, but remember, it's not the Jews, he probably means it's not the real ethical, moral Jews when he compares them to the few unrepresentative millionaires and billionaires. Go to the net, find the article yourself. It is entitled, Yes, It's the Jewish Lobby, and it consists of 1% of us. You know, folks, as I announced last week, Mideast Madness has expanded to 1 hour and 55 minutes as opposed to its old time slot starting at 4 and going for 55 minutes. We now are here for you. That's we, I and Free Radio Santa Cruz, the Free Radio Collective, are here for you every Monday, starting at 3 p.m. We continue through 4:55, but the show begins at 3 o'clock, 1500 hours Pacific time. I made the decision to expand the show, taking advantage of a fair amount of free time that we now have, that we're now experiencing on our 24/7 schedule. But motivated mostly by the fact that less than an hour simply didn't seem to be enough for me to get everything across that I wanted to for that day's show. And as I exclaimed at the very end of last week's show on the 24th of December, still seems like it's not enough time. There are some things I'm passionate enough about that I feel I can read about them every waking hour. Boy, it's getting hot in here. I'm going to disrobe partially. I'll let you use your imagination as to how much disrobing I'm doing. Now I'll have a refreshing beverage with food coloring, flavor, and aspartame. Oh, that is good. It is 3:51, 16:51 hours. No, 1551 hours, forgive me. Or 1551 hours, something like that. Before we break for the mid-show break, I get stuff from Jewish Voice for Peace. They began out of Berkeley, California. So to a lot of people, I know that spells it out for you, which way, which side of center they lean to. I get stuff from Jewish Voice for Peace, both in my physical postal mailbox and to my email inbox. And of course, as you can imagine, as some of you well know, this holiday slash end of year period is where some of them are most active with their appeals for cash. Of course, we here at Free Radio are always hungry for your money. We generally have enough in the bank to keep us going in a hand-to-mouth fashion for a month or two. But do consider sending any amount of money, $5, $4. Go ahead, send only a buck, but preferably not cash. Use a money order or check. And send that to FRSC Post Office Box 7811 Santa Cruz, C-R-U-Z, California 95061. Remember, please, we need a new studio near downtown Santa Cruz. 150 square feet, more or less. No more than $300 a month, please. And getting back to JVP, Jewish Voice for Peace. I took this next short piece here, it's rather short, from one of the email appeals for donations to JVP. And I think it's very important to share with you. I'm not actively or overtly soliciting donations for JVP. I just want you to know where I got this piece from. So listen up. I discovered this yesterday, entitled, I Did It, So Can You. Dear Ren, this is what I know. Each of us has the power to change, and when we do, the world changes too. I know this because I changed. My name is Rebecca Subar, and I'm the board chair of Jewish Voice for Peace. It's a role that would have seemed ridiculous 30 years ago when I was living as a settler in Gaza. I grew up in a warm, strictly observant Jewish family in Western New York. When I was 8, we first visited my cousins in a farm village north of Tel Aviv, and my senses remember it best. Jasmine and singing on a truck ride to the sea. I was a teenager in the 70s, and for the most part, the hippest causes matched my family's values. They cared about racial justice, education reform, and ending war. My first political troublemaking was on behalf of Israel, trying to get my synagogue youth group in line with the new West Bank Jewish settler movement. It was the edgy, exciting way to live a political dream. And, I thought, the right thing to do. Alas, I learned it was not so simple. In 1982, I went with my own young family to live my dream of being part of the settler movement. Our lives were deeply entwined with our love for Jewish everything. The spring we were there, Ariel Sharon, who was then Israel's Minister of Agriculture, came to speak at the groundbreaking for the new regional yeshiva, a house of study. Jewish protesters came, leftists opposed to the new settlements. One of them approached me, to my surprise, someone I recognized, Michael, a friend from home. He asked, "Rebecca, you can't seriously be part of this injustice, can you? Do you know there are Palestinians living down the road and this is their land?" he said. It made my head spin. How could we be doing anything unjust? Justice was something our people did. Settling our land was justice. Our community was good to our Arab neighbors. Our rabbis talked with their sheikhs. Michael's comment was so off, so wrong. But my friend had planted a seed that day, a seed that racked my head and made painful space for new information and new doubts. In a brief space of time, these doubts and my deeper down belief in equality and fairness occupied my entire awareness and prompted me to fundamentally change my life. So you could say I am living proof that people change. People have the power and responsibility to live into the change they believe in, to speak their truths in order that others, and so the world, can change too. I am part of Jewish Voice for Peace because this organization gives me the tools and courage to be the person like my friend Michael all those years ago, who says, "You've got to live your beliefs, Rebecca." The sweet smell of jasmine still tugs at my memories, and I still sing the beautiful old songs with my family. They are an important part of my history. Just as justice is, not just for my family, my neighbors, my people, but for everyone who shares this planet, for Palestinians and Jews equally. Rebecca Subar ends by saying, "Thank you for reading, thank you for donating, thank you for singing and for joining me in honoring our mutual belief in justice for all people. Sincerely, Rebecca Subar, Board Chair, Jewish Voice for Peace." You know, she expounds upon what is probably, for me, also, the same ultimate bottom line message that answers the question, how do we achieve peace in Israel and Palestine? My answer that I have come, which is the conclusion of all my reading and studies and exploring all of my adult life, is that it's going to be painful. Not just in the more obvious, tangible ways, like large groups of people perhaps having to move from one part of the land to the other, or in fences and walls being torn down. But it's going to be painful in the way that that really matters. Which is the reason why there hasn't been peace in the Middle East, because this has not been happening. It's going to be painful to see yourself as you really are, to see your side of the equation as it really is and how it's perceived by the opposition. It's going to hurt like hell to know that you've made mistakes. Heaven knows the Arabs have made some awful mistakes. The Palestinians have made some big mistakes. Even some of the leaders and past leaders of the current Palestinian National Congress have come forward and declared that it might have been a mistake for the Palestinians back in 1940, 47, and 48 to refuse the partition of Palestine between an Arab state and a Jewish state. Some of them have said so. I don't know what the current status is in terms of what percentage of them still think that. I'm still on the fence about that. Another big mistake that happened in the Arab world was after 1948, after the birth of Israel. Anger, profuse of anger amongst the peoples, and I'm sure this was encouraged by the government of respective Arab nations, and militancy led to the ousting of Jewish Arabs. You see, there are a couple of million Jewish Arabs, or so-called Sephardim, Sephardic Arabs, who have lived in the Middle East for many, many centuries. Maybe a couple of millennia. And, you know, people got mad, and perhaps thinking they had God on their side, the Muslims and other Arabs who were not Jewish expelled or chased away Jewish Arabs out of their countries, or perhaps just making it easy for them to leave. And, you know, this is typical retribution on a massive scale. Even though they knew that a large portion of them would go to Israel and just inflate that situation with more people of the Jewish faith, with more Zionists, the Arabs did it anyway. So, you know, I view that as one of probably the biggest single mistake in the history of the Arabs in the capital C conflict. But make no mistake, as I've been reading to you all these months, as I've been telling you all these months, Israel makes a hell of a lot of mistakes. The Israeli government lies about a lot of stuff. The IDF, Israeli so-called defense forces, lie about a lot of stuff. And what they're doing altogether, and this is what the Jews of Jewish Voice for Peace will tell you, along with the Jews of many, many, many other non-Zionist or even anti-Zionist Jewish organizations, will tell you this is not good for Judaism. The way Israel is acting is not good for Israel. It's certainly not good for the Palestinians. It does involve massive amounts of ethnic cleansing, both historical, achieved militarily at the point of a gun, achieved through economic means, and instituted by Israel's very own laws, institutionalized ethnic cleansing. It is racism. Zionism inherently is racism. The United Nations said so a number of years ago when they actually were sat down and caused to listen to Mr. Yasser Arafat at the United Nations. Now, some of you will tell me, wait, the United Nations rescinded that. They no longer officially consider Zionism to be racist. Well, you may recall, I think I spoke about this last week too, that this occurred as a favor by the United Nations to U.S. President George Herbert Walker Bush, 41, Bush Sr., because Bush had to bend over backwards to keep Israel from firing their missiles back to Baghdad when Baghdad, during the first Gulf War, was slamming parts of Israel and Palestine in general, Tel Aviv, etc., with its Scud missiles. And, I mean, it's very obvious to me that there was some heavy-handed Israeli lobbying that went on for them to get something out of this. And that took the form of Bush browbeating the United Nations into rescinding the Zionism is racism edict. So I think that's what's going on with that. Folks, it's 7 minutes after four. Another musical break taken from my lovely album, The Music of Arab Americans, a retrospective collection. This one is entitled number 10. Well, it's not entitled number 10. Lieb al-Kail, or Playing the Horses. Lieb al-Kail.
Stwanat Nigmat al-Shar, al-Ustaz Rizallah al-Bunay.
طير عقلي وهد الحيل لعب الخيل لعب الخيل طير عقلي وهد الحيل
لعب الخيل لعب الخيل طير عقلي وهد الحيل لعب الخيل لعب الخيل طير عقلي وهد الحيل
حلمت النمرة بمنامي السبعة طلعت قدامي حلمت النمرة بمنامي السبعة طلعت قدامي صرت أحسب أرقامي صرت أحسب أرقامي وحسابي رح عب الكيل وحسابي رح عب الكيل
لعب الخيل لعب الخيل طير عقلي وهب الخيل لعب الخيل لعب الخيل طير عقلي وهب الخيل
بين لي اني ربحان حطيت مية على حصان بين لي اني ربحان حطيت مية على حصان والسابع واحد نعسان والسابع واحد نعسان كان ماشي ومقطوع الحيل كان ماشي ومقطوع الحيل
لعب الخيل لعب الخيل طير عقلي وهب الحيل لعب الخيل لعب الخيل طير عقلي وهب الحيل
يا كان معي مال بحبح ظنت حالي رح اربح كان معي مال بحبح ظنت حالي رح اربح طلعت من اللعب مشرشح طلعت من اللعب مشرشح وما تغمض جفني بالليل ما تغمض جفني بالليل
لعب الخيل لعب الخيل طير عقلي وهب الخيل لعب الخيل لعب الخيل طير عقلي وهب الخيل لعب الخيل لعب الخيل طير عقلي وهب الخيل لعب الخيل لعب الخيل طير عقلي وهب الخيل
مرة بتربح شريالين ومرات بتخسر ألفين مرة بتربح شريالين ومرات بتخسر ألفين كل خسارة عالحالين كل خسارة عالحالين حالتنا صفت بالويل وحالتنا صفت بالويل
لعب الخيل لعب الخيل طير عقلي وهب الخيل لعب الخيل لعب الخيل طير عقلي وهب الخيل
مرة طلعت من البيت واعد مرتي جبلا زيت في مرة طلعت من البيت واعد مرتي جبلا زيت من دربة رحت تخبيت من دربة رحت تخبيت المصاري طاروا عالخيل المصاري طاروا عالخيل
لعب الخيل لعب الخيل طير عقلي وهب الخيل لعب الخيل لعب الخيل طير عقلي وهب الخيل
قالت لي دنقنا من البرد من الامطار وكتر الشرد قالت لي دنقنا من البرد من الامطار وكتر الشرد وين كنت مخبى يا قرد وين كنت مخبى يا قرد وزهر كنت زاير الخيل بيزهر كنت زاير الخيل
لعب الخيل لعب الخيل طير عقلي وهب الخيل لعب الخيل لعب الخيل طير عقلي وهب الخيل لعب الخيل لعب الخيل طير عقلي وهب الخيل لعب الخيل لعب الخيل طير عقلي وهب الخيل
Yes, folks, Laib al-Khail, which means playing the horses, I believe. Yep, playing the horses. It's 4:13. Got about 3/4 of an hour to go. Let me give those phone numbers out again. Area code 831. 427-3772, if you'd like to talk to me, you will be on the air. You must be on the air if you call these numbers, according to my rules. You don't have to be in agreement with me. You don't have to disagree. I promise that I will not shout you down if I'm in severe disagreement with you. And I'll do my best not to cut you off the line. 427-3772 or call me at 469-3119. The second line is 469-3119. Betty, my friend? Is it Betty or Betsy? Feel free to talk to me. Betty, you and everyone else can, you have the option of writing an email to MideastMadness@ecomail.org. MideastMadness@ecomail, E-C-O-M-A-I-L, at org, .org, ecomail.org. In the weeks preceding the Christian holiday of Christmas, I've been asking people to be aware of a product which locally is called SodaStream. This is a kitchen appliance, and it is made in illegal Israeli settlements. Now, even though the time for gift giving is largely past, depending on your social habits and or your own religion, the boycott is still on. Products made in the Israeli West Bank settlements are illegally used, illegally seized Palestinian land and water and minerals. Exploitation of natural resources in any occupied territories, militarily occupied territories anywhere in the world, is not allowed by international law. Palestinians don't receive any profits from those products made by Jewish settlers. They have no agreement, no over-the-counter civil agreements that were made with the Jewish settlers. Settlers didn't bother getting the permission or even the acquiescence of the Palestinians. They simply took the land and, for the most part, ignore the Palestinian natives, native Arabs who lived there first. And they make their little products. In fact, SodaStream, you may recall earlier the previous hour today, I mentioned in one of the articles the names of several Israeli settlements in the West Bank. One that I mentioned is the one which is the culprit here. The settlement is Ma'ale Adumim, and it contains an industrial park called Mishor Edomim. That's the Ma'ale Adumim settlement and the West Bank Mishor Edomim Industrial Park. They're the makers of SodaStream, the manufacturers, and they package it and prepare it for sale to various places around the world. We don't want you to buy it, because if you do, you are sanctioning, in effect, whether you mean to or not, sanctioning the kind of apartheid that they had in South Africa and the kind that they're exercising now in Palestine. It goes beyond apartheid, though, even before people began calling it what it is in Israel and in Palestine. It's illegal, it's bad business, it's totally unfair. Palestinians have a hard enough time keeping their homes. Did you know that since 1967 there have been more than 27,000 demolitions of Palestinian Arab residences? Not just in the territories, but in Israel too. 27,000 plus demolitions of homes. Early on, when they started doing it, the Israelis would often say these were the homes of terrorists or complicitors in terrorism. Now they do it far beyond that reason, whether or not it's truly a valid reason. They do it to make room for more settlements, to expand existing Jewish settlements. They do it to build new military bases. This has been the case, a massive new military base in the territories, supposedly for Israel's defense. Yeah, yeah. You want to defend yourself, take more land from the natives, and then build up your military to protect them from getting back at you. Makes a lot of sense, huh? The international boycott of firms that supported apartheid in South Africa helped overturn that racist regime. We can do it again. In other words, we want to overturn the racist regime, which is currently in the form of the political party, the Likud party of Israel, that Benjamin Netanyahu, the current prime minister, is the leader of, the Likud. probably the most right-wing militant administration in the history of modern Israel, with the possible exception of Ben-Gurion's when it all began in 48. Menachem Begin, when he was prime minister, he was a Likudnik, as I recall. So was Yitzhak Shamir. All these guys were soldiers. Shamir was a general, and Begin certainly was a general in the Zionist armed militant partisans who chased out and killed and massacred the Palestinian Arabs so long ago. These are all old soldiers from the old battle, similar to General Eisenhower becoming president of the U.S. He was the supreme commander of all the Allied forces in the European theater in World War II. First they kill, and then they administer over the killing. Really, folks, call me at 427-3772 or 469-3119. Free Radio Santa Cruz. Talk to me direct and live. I'm here in the studio. And I'm, so lonely. So lonely. I need your company. Would be nice to know if people are out there listening, or at least listening actively enough to care to call. Boycott Soda Stream. More information at boycottsodastream.org. Not Soda Spring, but Soda Stream. In the name of human rights, boycott Soda Stream. Alas, there is a phone call. And as you can hear, they hung up. I don't know what that's about. Perhaps the person wasn't patient enough after only two rings. Maybe they turned chicken. Hello? Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yes. Hello?
Oh, well, I guess we're not getting through.
Hang on a second. I can hear you. Can you hear me? Well, this is strange, folks. What apparently happened is they called in on one line or the other. I turned up the volume levers on both lines 1 and 2. I got a steady busy signal on line 1. And then I finally heard this woman's voice on line 2. If I recall properly how to do this, you turn the appropriate phone line up, either 1 or 2. Oh, dear. My friend, I hope you call me back, because I'm really trying to make this work. This time I'll open up all the mic buttons and see if that works. Please call me back. But then again, you know, getting the hang-up signal after only two rings, that's kind of suspicious. I can't help but wonder what's going on. I'm looking at all the levers now. Mic 1, mic 2, mic 3, phone line 1, CD 1, CD 2, CD to MP3 3, the VCR, there's one for the turntable, the PC, of course, that's for normal streaming programming and downloaded programming. Tape one, spare one. I'm going to have to turn almost everything up. Again, my friend, We'll just have to try it again. I don't know why you couldn't hear me. I know everyone else heard you when you said, I guess we're not getting through. And then you hung up. When you call again, please be patient. Wait a few more seconds. There might be a delay involved in my getting my voice across. Now, the mute buttons are all up. We're not muted. And again, I did hear you. I did hear your voice. I do not understand why you couldn't hear my voice. Well, we'll just furrow on, shall we? Sally forth, as it were. Oh. Oh, okay. Now you can call me. I forgot to turn off the buttons, which I turned on when I first heard the ring. Okay. Now the lines are open. Now you can call. They're off, which means they're open. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Hello? Hello? Hello?
Hello. This is Uncle Dennis.
Hello, Uncle Dennis. Hey, I gotcha.
Okay. What you need to do is right above the slider on the phone one and the microphone one... Especially microphone one, that blue knob for aux one needs to be turned up to about the 3 o'clock position.
Okay, immediately above the yellow knob, there are two blue knobs. You're saying the one that the lower of the two blue knobs?
Both of the blue knobs need to be at the 3 o'clock position. I can hear you fine, actually.
So okay.
It sounds to me like they're okay.
Did you say under mic one or under phone line one?
Mic one.
Okay, mic one.
Yeah, I can hear you fine, which means that those knobs are turned up correctly. I don't understand what happened to your previous caller, but it's probably not a good idea to turn both phones on at once. So, anyway, good luck, Ren.
Wait, do you want the blue knob under phone line one to be turned up as well? The pan knob? I mean the blue?
That one should be turned up also.
Okay, well, it's up now, and I'll turn up the one on line... those are taped over.
That's to prevent feedback.
Okay, I understand. Okay. Well, thanks so much, Dennis. Thank you for your help.
You're welcome, Ren. Bye.
Bye. Uncle... Can't forget to turn those off. If nothing more, the dial tone tells me to turn the switches to off and open the lines again. That was Uncle Dennis, as you heard, Dennis P. Davey, who is a major activist and personality within the Free Radio Santa Cruz Collective. So, hon, that woman who called, don't give up on me now. I knew absolutely nothing about those blue knobs, and I do not understand why they were turned off to begin with. Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can hear you. Now we're cooking.
Okay, well, that's great. Well, this is Betsy and Charlie Phillips. We wanted to wish everybody Happy New Year.
Betsy and Charlie Phillips. It's wonderful to hear from you. I hope you have the best, all the best to you in 2013. And now, to clarify something for me, is this, you said Betty, right?
It's Betsy and Charlie Phillips.
Are you the Betsy I spoke with last weekend?
No, that was a different Betsy.
Okay. Well, I didn't mean to confuse you or make you paranoid or anything, I was indeed talking to specifically another Betty or Betsy. Do you listen to the show other than today?
We turn on Free Radio Santa Cruz every time we're in the car because it's always intelligent and it's always different, or if it's not that, then it's something really kooky.
That is terrific to hear. I have my own opinions about the things that I hear. We do an awful lot of music, a great variety of music, of course, and I think we give NPR a run for their money, even though I'm very, very long-standing fan and former financial supporter of National Public Radio. I think we do pretty good, and I hope you consider donating to us if you haven't already.
Well, no, I haven't already.
I'm not gonna. Go ahead.
We want to plug Charlie's show, which is Voices from the Village, and it's on community television on Sunday nights at 7 p.m. And he does live call-ins, so we were like really relating when we were having trouble with the calls, because it's one of the trickiest things is getting those live calls in.
Yeah, it can be. This is very exciting for me. This is the first successful on-air call that I've gotten into the studio in the 6 or 7 months that I've been doing the show. Even though we haven't yet even said anything about the topic of my program, I'm so happy to hear from you. And I'm especially excited that people are listening. Do you have anything to say about the subject matter?
Well, perseverance pays off. The thing I have to say about the subject matter is the Palestinian situation is just one that just tears your heart in part. You know, I was married to a Jewish person for a long time, and so I grew. You know, I was totally with his point of view, and so at that was the only thing he just could not handle. He was left-wing and on everything else, but he just couldn't handle the Palestinian position because of, he's had family, Nazis destroyed all of his family, and so he had very, very strong feelings about the whole situation there.
You're talking about the Holocaust, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I have horror stories, too. I have a little bit of family history. I've had an uncle and a second or third cousin who was killed by the Israelis in 1948. And I just found this out very recently. But the difference is, that was in 48, and people who lost family members and so much and experienced so much pain from the Holocaust, the Jewish people in Europe, those people very often also support Israel, but they make this link between the two, which I don't consider to be completely valid. You know, if you lost family in the Holocaust, no matter how bad it was, it certainly doesn't justify what the Jews do to Palestinians. And it actually doesn't even have anything to do with the creation of Israel. At least not the way people think. Anyway, thanks for your opinion, and I hope you continue to listen, and I hope to hear from you again. Have a great new year.
Well, thank you, and I'm glad I got a chance to speak with you, and many hopes for world peace in the coming year.
You bet. Live the dream. Bye-bye. Well, gents and ladies, you just heard a monumental thing happen here on Mideast Madness, the first phone call. And I really do, I am genuinely excited because, you know, they said they were in their car. Okay, what do we got going here? We have another line. Yo, this is Ren.
It is.
This is Ren. Hello.
I'm listening to you on the radio.
Yeah, I'm here in the studio. I'm speaking on the microphone.
And you have a delay?
Not now we don't, obviously. The only delay that might have been in play there was figuring out which phone line is going. But you're on line one now.
Okay. I had a little trouble getting through. I'm listening online. I'm in San Diego.
Okay.
Just really kind of wanted to express my support for your program, for your mission, really.
Doing what I can.
Yeah, me too. Previously, my efforts were pretty much confined to online chat rooms and forums.
Yes.
And I've discovered that that's virtually impossible because of, apparently the chat rooms and the forums are packed with Hezbollah operatives.
Hezbollah, and you mean? Hezbollah?
Hezbollah.
What is Hezbollah?
That is the Jewish name for the process and the it's the name for propaganda.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do. I think, in fact, I have come across that word recently, Hezbollah.
I should hope that most Americans would learn it. And you can find the Hezbollah handbook online now as a PDF file, and it lays out very succinctly, well, succinctly with a little bit of double talk or double speak, the tactics that are being taught to all of the Zionist operatives and students and zealots on how to control a debate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty freaky stuff.
Yeah, you know, I also came across some material a month or two ago, and I may or may not have it here, but it speaks about the latest formal, well, maybe formal is not the best word, but it talks about the latest efforts of the Israeli Zionists to infiltrate, as it were, the dialogue, particularly among U.S. colleges and Canadian colleges and universities. And it lays out, maybe this is some of the same material you have, it lays out the strategy for influencing the dialogue in institutions of higher education with a heavy slant towards Israel and against Palestinian Arabs. Yeah, so
right.
I do know, I know where you're coming from. Say, you said you're in San Diego. Do you have anything, or did you have anything to do with the massively huge dialogue group that I've heard about down there?
No.
No? Oh, well. No. You see, it's about 4 years ago, I moved back to California, my native state. I was in Minnesota for a very, very long time, since 1974. In 2003, I came back here. But before I did, my last year there, I had some doings with a Ukrainian Jewish man in Minnetonka, just outside of Minneapolis, and he said that he lived in San Diego and was part of a very successful, at least during the time that he was active with them, Israel-Palestine dialogue group, which met physically. But you haven't heard of them, huh?
No, I'm not terribly active outside of the internet.
Okay,
I'm a little bit. I'm a little bit guarded about my position on the matter.
Okay, well, I'm certainly not trying to jump on your case about it. I was just curious. I just wanted to know if you knew about that. But I see, this was 4 years ago when I was talking to Coney, my friend Coney. He's from the Ukraine.
Huh? To tell you the truth, I think 4 years ago I would have been more or less neutral on the matter, on the issues.
Uh-huh.
It was actually my experience online. I got a computer in 2002, I think, and about 2003, I began to really enjoy the political dialogue on the websites. Like back then, it was AOL. I think MSN had a chat room, extensive one.
There's a zillion of them now.
I know, but the problem is, you see, that there are too many. And let's see, Pal Talk. I don't know if you've heard of that.
No.
It's Pal Talk would be a really good site because it's very organized. The system is very sophisticated. You can use voice, and it is moderated to the extent that absolute crazies and wackos and disruptors can easily be dealt with, you know.
Is that PAL as in Palestinian?
No. PAL as in friend, I think.
Okay, cool.
Especially because after about a year of participating in it, I realized that the whole thing was a front.
In whose favor?
Who do you think?
Okay, so it's PAL Talk is an Israeli chat room, as it were?
Yeah, and it's like they have these really sophisticated people who propagandize, and if you try to present an alternative point of view to the Zionist one, they have all kinds of sophisticated methods for neutralizing you and preventing you from any kind of effective dialogue.
Well, I have no doubt that this is the case. What's your name?
Call me Robert.
Robert. I'm Ren. Ren is in Lawrence. And Robert, I feel pretty secure in saying that you're pretty right that there are such sites. But I want to emphasize to you and to everyone listening, you know, what we're saying can easily be misconstrued as anti-Semitic. It can be misconstrued as conspiracy theory and paranoia. But Robert. I know you're sincere, and I know this stuff does exist, and I've come across some of it. Before there was an internet, I came across it, you know, in one form or another. And there's no room for anti-Semitism here. That's not the purpose of this show. And I know that you're not being anti-Semitic. But anyone who happens to be listening to us right now, I hope you're not dismissing us as a bunch of paranoid bigots. We're trying to be responsible about the things that we're learning, and we're trying to learn more.
Maybe I can help in that matter a little bit here.
Sure.
Well, first of all, I'm not a racist.
Uh-huh. Me neither.
And I have to take exception to anyone using the term anti-Semitic, because the implication there is that, and that's part of the thing, the implication is that to be against a group which is actively seeking to gain power and control, to be against them is to be against their race.
Or their religion.
First problem, of course, is that the Jews that we know are not a race.
Well,
they can argue it any way they want.
And they do.
They're not.
Well, you know, then again, I hear you, but there's also a school of thought that says the whole argument of race in any context, when you're talking about Homo sapiens, human beings, is completely invalid. That races as such don't exist.
Well, I know, but that's a matter of I think that's maybe a logic problem, really. Black or white fallacy. You know, there are a lot of gray areas between the black and the white.
Yes.
I mean, I can easily understand an anthropologist's point of view that there is no such thing as race, or even a geneticist if he wants to argue it.
Uh-huh.
But the fact of the matter is that I know whether or not I'm in Zimbabwe or Peking or Beijing.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, yeah.
And it's pretty, as a matter of fact, you know, I came across an anthropologist's study of the people of Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
Some years ago, I was reading it. And so far, I haven't been able to verify this any more than the guy's name was Osgood, or something Osgood. God, I forget. It's a three-volume study. Apparently, Chinese who are real Chinese, when they're born, they have a small blue mark on the back of their shoulder, I think.
They're born with this.
It's genetic.
Okay.
It's like a birthmark, and it disappears with maturity. You know, I mean, there are race markers, you know. Let me put it this way. Anyone can convert. I suppose they have to have approval, but anyone can convert to the Jewish faith, right?
Yes.
And in so doing, they acquire the ability to claim that they are Jews, and if someone is against them, they can call it racism.
I see your point.
What kind of sense does that make?
Yeah, and I hear you. I understand what you're saying. And, you know, lately there have been people running around, geneticists and those who are quoting geneticists and other scientists who are adhering to a conclusion based on DNA tests that Jews, for example, have a stronger chromosomatic tie to historic Palestine than any of the, as they would say, so-called Palestinian Arabs. And they will tell you that Palestinians are not really Arabs, that they are Canaanite / Turkic or something like that, which really, I don't care what your tests show you, that doesn't mean anything. I mean, they're the people who live there now and have for many hundreds of years.
Thousands of years.
Thousands, in some cases, yeah. I mean, even the Palestinians can feasibly have their bloodlines traced back to the ancient Philistines, who were, historically speaking, there before the Hebrew people were. I mean,
I know, but the whole argument is really silly anyway, because I could be genotyped as, I think that's the right word, as being Scottish.
Mm-hmm.
But that does not, that doesn't give me any kind of valid claim on anything in Scotland.
Exactly.
And we're only talking a few hundred years there, you know.
I also believe that there are many Jews who have the integrity to deal with this subject themselves, and I'm sure they've had internal mental battles about what am I, who am I, and that they've had to hash that out within themselves and amongst their family and fellow Jews, just as Arabs or people throughout the Middle East have had to struggle with the concept of being quote-unquote Arab. You know, what does it mean to be an Arab? What does it mean to be a so-called Arab if I'm not a Muslim? That kind of thing. Robert, let me just ask you one question here.
Sure.
How did you ask, excuse me, how did you find out about Mideast Madness?
I have an interest in radio.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, I was attracted to the whole... Well, when I was in Europe, we used to listen to an offshore station that was on a boat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a pirate.
Pirate station.
Yeah, you know.
They made a movie out of that. It's a comedy. I haven't seen it, but I've heard of it.
I'm not sure it was the same station that they made the movie about.
Probably.
But anyway.
Not. Yeah.
I'm talking about a long time ago. But anyway, so anyway, yeah. I searched out pirate radio and found FRSC, and I've been a listener online for a number of years, quite a few years. I happened to hear your program.
Well,
and I happened to hear your program about the time that I began to understand that there's a real Orwellian kind of deception going on with this this whole scam that's being played on the American people.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. It is one of the most, in my opinion, one of the most successful and well-orchestrated political hoaxes of the 20th and 21st century. People in America are so used to the idea, the general concept, the basic concept, that Israel is the good guy and the Arabs are all the bad guys. And they're just, you know, common American is not getting the whole message through mainstream media.
It's a very, very complex deception.
It's
and I think that to awaken someone who has fallen for it, I think would actually take something of the magnitude of like a cult deprogramming operation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm serious about that.
I mean,
for one thing, look at this.
Yeah.
If I confront a Zionist activist,
mm-hmm.
and I say that, you know, if I can make my case that Jews are not a race,
yes,
and they don't have standing because of that, you know, to make some claims. If I can convince them of that,
yes,
then they'll say, well, yes, but we're a religion.
Yes.
Okay. Bong. You know, well, there's some kind of a logical fallacy involved there that's very mind-numbing. And even if you, and then if you argue, well, religion is kind of pre-modern and really shouldn't be a part of the dialogue, right? You know, because, let's face it, you know, I mean, that's where it is, man. It's like, it's pre-modern and we should have moved on from that a long time ago.
Yeah, it's certainly, I don't consider it to be 21st century or even 20th century.
And so, I make my case. So
Robert,
I make my case there, right?
Yes.
Then they say, "Oh, yes, but we're a culture or an ethnicity."
Of course, there's some culture going on. Robert, listen, I got 3 minutes left of this program, and then I'm off. But thanks so much for your call. You're a very intelligent man. You certainly have contributed to the show. Again, you can catch this replay of this show on radioforall.org. It might be radioforall.net, come to think of it. One of the two, folks, .net or .org. And Robert, please consider donating to us. FRSC PO Box 7811, Santa Cruz.
I have.
Terrific. Hey, man. Keep listening.
Oh, I will.
And as they say, keep the faith.
Absolutely, man. Justice is the idea.
So long.
And thank you.
Thank you. Well, folks, how exciting. Two in a row. You see the dynamic there? You get one brave person, or perhaps just a deeply caring person, who calls in to the show. They sense that I need some company here. And voila, another call immediately comes in after. I like to think that that's breaking the nut, breaking the ice. That's going to do it for this has been a monumental episode of Mideast Madness. Again, that address for sending your donations in is FRSC, which stands for Free Radio Santa Cruz. You just need to put on the envelope FRSC. You could even put on the check FRSC. Post Office Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Please consider donating. Thank you so much. Join me and the other programmers who donate every month. For us, though, I guess it's more of a collective's access fee. And don't forget my email address, MideastMadness@ecomail.org. That sure was refreshing to be able to talk to someone else instead of just reading to myself, or what appears to be reading to myself. Again, I am Ren Tuwil, a Palestinian slash Arab American. Or is that Palestinian Arab slash American? A lot to think about. Please tune in again next week at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. 101.3 FM on your dial. Streaming live at www.freakradio.org. We need a new studio, 150 square feet. No more than $300 a month, please. Apply yourselves out there. This is Mideast Madness. So long.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Monday, December 31st, 2012. The Israeli military orders Palestinian families to move out of their villages in the West Bank, and the report documents Israeli troops' arrests of Palestinian civilians from Hebron City in December. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. Head of the Wadi Malha area in the northern plains of the occupied West Bank, Arif Daragma, stated that the Israeli army intends to displace around 10,000 Palestinian Bedouins in the area in order to conduct military training. Daragma said that the Israeli army handed written military orders to the residents stating that they should leave as the soldiers will be using live ammunition in military drills in the area. He added that the grazing area inhabited by shepherds including Wadi Malih, Ain al-Hilwa, Al-Fawwa Valley, Al-Meta, Al-Buraj and other villages. The army informed the residents that they have until the morning of this coming Wednesday before the army conducts its training in the northern plains. Israel performed similar military drills in the area last summer, forcing dozens of families to leave their homes, seeking shelter in other areas until the drills were conducted. In other news, the Palestinian Prisoner Society, PPS, Hebron branch, reported that the Israeli army kidnapped since the beginning of this month 88 Palestinians in the southern West Bank city of Hebron, including 12 children and 18 patients. The PPS said that the Israeli army conducted numerous violations against the kidnapped Palestinians, including firing rounds of live ammunition in the course of their arrest, physically assaulting the residents, including beating them, kicking them, striking them with rifle butts and batons, an issue that led to serious injuries in some cases. The PBS added that the army kidnapped in December 12 children in direct violation of Article 40 of the International Convention on the Rights of the Child of 1989, kidnapped 18 patients and wounded Palestinians who were tortured and abused during interrogation. The PBS also reported that Ofer Israeli Military Court imposed fines that amount to 36,000 Israeli shekels against the Palestinian detainees in December and said that Israeli courts are practicing theft by imposing very high fines against the detainees and their families. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Monday, December 31st news roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. On behalf of the IMEMC News team, we wish you had a Merry Christmas and hope for a better new year in 2013. Today's report has been brought to you by Hassam Kassis and me, Ghassam Bandoura.